for argument is Multani versus Gonzalez. Mr. Bawangi.
May it please the court, I'm Godfrey Mwangi for the petitioner. Good morning, Judge Posner, Judge Mannion, Judge Wood. I assure the court this is not a Social Security case, and I also assure the court that my twin daughters are still in grade school, so they won't be bugging
we'll
the
wait
court
wait a few years.
Anytime soon. My client is before this court coming from the Board of Immigration Appeals in a case that has all kinds of features to it and is kind of confusing even to me, who is his counsel, because I don't have the benefit of the record underlying two orders that are referred to repeatedly in the proceedings before the IJ that I was involved in. And a couple
but
of times...
Don't some things just come out from this record? Mr. Multani has been ordered to be deported, to use that terminology, from the country. And the board seems to have been willing to say, never mind. I mean, suppose... this was an improper reason to revoke the marriage visa, you still don't merit an exercise of our discretion to keep you here. And isn't that the end of it? That is a discretionary call on their part when all is said and done. Why do we have jurisdiction to review it?
Judge Wood, ordinarily I would agree with you on that issue, but the problem with that proposition is the following. Initially, when the board reopened and remanded the case, the board was aware that Mr. Multani had those two orders against him because I filed the motion and made them aware of that fact by filing a form I-212, which is a request for permission to apply for admission after deportation, which made the board aware of that fact, because that form is filed by people who are either outside the United States seeking to come back in because they have an approved visa petition, or people who have reentered and are seeking permission, which is kind of a legal fiction. The board can adjudicate the I-212, or the IJ can adjudicate the I-212, pretending the person is outside and then giving them permission to pretend they're coming back in to adjust their status if they determine that he is eligible for that benefit. The board remanded saying that the government had not responded to our motion. Now, that by itself never qualifies one for a remand, because I filed many motions for remand which the government has not responded to, but which the board has denied.
But more information comes out in Mr. Multani's case, and maybe one does need to look at these other proceedings. I mean, we've got this evidence that he was proceeding under what strikes me as a different name. I mean, I realize it's his first name and middle name or something, but essentially a different name. There are a great number of equities in this case that make me think he hadn't gotten to the point of being eligible to adjust his status, being on the brink of adjusting his status. And I don't see what a delay pending resolution of the appeal of the visa revocation could have done for you, given the board's ruling.
Judge, again, the difficulty here is that in front of the IJ in Chicago, when I got involved in the case, the IJ was willing to delay the hearing to permit the government to revoke his wife's approved petition for immediate relative, which the government had sat on from 1997 until 2001.
Right,
and
but in the end, though, what difference did that make in light of the board's ruling that even if the whole thing with the marriage visa were changed, he is not. That doesn't give you a right to stay here. That just gets you to the point where the board can exercise its discretion.
Because the allegation of abuse of the system is an allegation. It is not proven in any significant or manifest way.
The board's not entitled to look at these earlier petitions from Paramjit Singh?
The board does so using what the IJ makes as a finding on a record that does not exist. On a couple of occasions, the IJ looks me in the eye, asks me what my defense is, and I look him back in the eye and I say to him twice or more that I don't have those records. I cannot defend based upon a record that I have not seen.
But what's this thing you attached to your brief then? You have attached to your brief at page, let's see how you paginated this, anyway, in your appendix, it says 000204, this application, last name Singh, first name Paramjit, that has a different date of last arrived into the United States, 3394. What?
Those are bits and pieces that they filed in support of the revocation of his wife's petition, saying these things prove that he's the kind of person who would get involved in a sham marriage.
Right, and that's where the board takes it the next step and says, well, that's not a reasonable inference, but the fact that he did this at all is a reason to deny.
But, Your Honor, they take that out of a record, which in immigration court they don't produce, to give me the opportunity to see if there's exculpatory evidence in that record.
Okay.
I don't see that record. I cannot defend against the allegations that come out of it. And so they can do that, thwart the congressional design, which this court held in Bensley-Mann, that if the IJ denies a continuance in a manner that thwarts that congressional design, his decision is reviewable. That's the basis of my argument, that this court has jurisdiction to review that.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Mwangi. Ms. Holm?
May it please the court. My name is Genevieve Holm. I represent the respondent, Alberto Gonzalez. Petitioner petitioned for review from the denial of a continuance to await the appeal of the revocation of the approval of his wife's 130 visa petition. As a discretionary determination, the immigration judge denied the continuance and the adjustment of status application based on a 14-year history of flouting the immigration laws. This case is distinguishable from Subban and Bensley-Mann because the immigration judge, as affirmed by the board, denied not only the continuance but also denied the adjustment of status application in his discretion, a decision which expressly precluded from review under Section 242A2B1 and is recognized as such under Subban.
But, you know, we didn't quite get that far, and it seems to me there's maybe a middle ground here that this court and some of the other courts of appeals have been reaching for, because it's a little odd to say there's no review when in both Subban and in Bensley-Mann we have looked at the denial of a discretionary continuance to see if it had the effect of a substantive ruling, and if it had an inappropriate effect, we've gone on and reviewed it. If it didn't have that effect, then at that point, whether you want to call it very strong deference to the IJ or whether you want to call it something else, it doesn't strike me as a classic jurisdictional argument. It strikes me as more the content of what happens once this court is looking at the case. And,
yes,
you know, you're certainly free to say, if you want to, that that perhaps this man doesn't fall into that category as recognized by Subban or Ben Soleimani, but I don't think it's the same as saying there's no jurisdiction.
Well, this case is both distinguishable from Subban as well as...
Denial of continuance dooms his case, right?
I'm sorry, what, Your Honor?
Denial of the continuance dooms his case, right?
Yes, however...
See, ordinarily, when you have a denial of a continuance, it imposes inconvenience on the party who wanted the continuance, and sometimes that's prejudicial error, but usually it's just, you know... not that significant, but here,
well,
these denials of continuance act as the death knell of the case. So that suggests that they ought to be reviewed, not necessarily, you know, without appropriate deference, but shouldn't be treated just as beyond any kind of judicial.
Actually, I'm not sure that it dooms this case, because the immigration judge did decide that even if the appeal of the revocation were granted and that petitioner were statutorily eligible for the adjustment of status, in his discretion, he would deny the adjustment of status application, and the board upheld that. And, in fact, the immigration judge did deny the adjustment of status application, and the board upheld that. So the adjustment of status application was denied. So this case is distinguishable from both Subban and Ben Soleimani. And adjustment of status, when it's denied as a matter of discretion, is expressly not reviewable under 242A2B1.
So you're saying the denial of the continuance had no significance?
Absolutely, in this case. Yes, Your Honor.
At what point, though, could one tell that? I mean, I don't think we can have a wait-and-see approach to these things. The denial of the continuance might have had no immediate effect because of the board's alternative ruling saying, let's assume for the sake of argument everything goes his way on the marriage visa, if you want to call it that, and we're still going to do the same thing. Well, maybe that's a way of saying even ex ante you knew it had no significance. But I don't think we can look at after the fact events, like what eventually happens to the petition.
Well, but those are the facts in this case, however. The immigration judge decided it that way, and the board affirmed it that way. So this case is completely clear.
This case, you're arguing from that ex ante perspective, we know right away looking at this, which is not, to repeat myself, the same thing as saying we aren't reviewing. We are looking at it to see what, in fact, did the immigration judge do. Did the immigration judge say he was denying continuance and, in fact, rule on the merits of the case de facto, or is it just sort of an ordinary... I mean, the continuance falls out altogether, I suppose, in your view, since the other ground is what they turn to, which Mr. Mwangi argues he didn't have enough enough background material to challenge.
And as to his argument about the background materials, he never raised the issue of no background materials below. He never raised it to the board. Furthermore, anything the immigration judge relied upon to look at as to petitioner's record, petitioner testified to under oath in the immigration court. He was put on the stand and answered questions. And he admitted everything that the immigration judge relied upon. He admitted that he entered without inspection, that he was arrested in Florida and placed in proceedings. He admitted that he used the name Paramjit Singh Multani, and that he did not appear for proceedings down there, and that he was ordered deported in absentia in Florida in 1992. He admitted that he filed for asylum in California in 1996 under the name Paramjit Singh. And in that application, he admitted that he claimed he last entered the United States in 1994. He admitted that in that application, There were other misrepresentations. He said he went to two hearings but did not appear at the third one, and that an OSC was issued in 1996, and he admitted that his attorney had sent him that in absentia order that was issued in 1997. He admitted that he self-deported to Canada in 1999 and that he later illegally entered the United States. So certainly, and there are documents supporting each of these things in the record. So again, all of this came in without objection in the immigration court, and none of these issues were raised to the board. So there's also an exhaustion issue here, and then neither the immigration court nor the board had any opportunity to do anything about this record, and then the court exhaustion is also a jurisdictional issue. But there is certainly a very complete or at least an adequate record here for the court to have, the board and the immigration court to have made the findings that it made.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Hall. Mr. Nwangi, how much time does he have? 5 minutes.
Honorable judges, I don't mean to be difficult, but this is the kind of case that drives me crazy, because I don't know what exhaustion is if after I tell an immigration judge...
But he had such a terrible record that he wasn't going to get the adjustment of status. That's what Ms. Holm is saying, so...
Judge Posner
wouldn't have done anything for him.
Judge Posner, with due respect to my colleague here and the board and the immigration court, they've repeated that charge, and I told the immigration judge before
he put... Well, what would the continuance have done for you? What would you have done?
Judge Posner, may I answer your first question?
No,
first?
Answer this question. I'm not interested in the first question.
Judge Posner, the continuance would have assisted me to try to get to the bottom of where the record that underlies each one of those two in absentia orders is, because it's critical to my ability to defend against the accusation that this man has abused the system.
But how can you do that once he's made all the admissions that Ms. Holm just reviewed? He's pretty much pulled the rug out from under you.
Your Honor, because I was sitting in that courtroom when I told Judge Vinicor that I cannot defend a man on a record I have not seen.
Well, I'm sure Judge Vinicor to that extent understood, and if he'd sat there and kept his mouth shut, that would be one thing, but he says all of
Your
these
Honor,
things.
Your Honor, these are individuals who come from countries where courts are courts that order people to be executed the day their trial is done.
No, they're not Indian.
The man went above and beyond. He went above and beyond my advice. The judge put him under oath after I told the judge I didn't believe he could testify in English. He needed an interpreter. We had no interpreter in the court. I don't know if this man understood what he was answering. And so the answers he's giving, if you read the transcript.
But that's an argument that the government, I think, rightly says you didn't present to the board. You
Judge
can't
Wood
come
have,
in with these language arguments.
Judge Wood, if you have read my brief
I
to the board.
I certainly have. I always read your briefs, Mr. Wongi.
My brief to the board raises those issues. And I do raise the issue with due respect to my colleague again. I don't mean to be difficult, but I raised those issues to the board. I filed a motion to reconsider with the board, and they ignored the arguments. And so for anybody to say that this man admitted these things, yes, in front of an immigration judge who is pushing him, he thinks that he will get some sympathy if he admits what the judge is saying. My job is to defend him. If I don't know what happened, how do I do that?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mulangi and Ms. Holmes. Next case.